Well, as Kenbai has just said, he has a scheme to reduce the optical noises in LIGO factor 2 below the standard quantum limit by essentially saying the standard quantum limit doesn't exist. So I want to talk about reducing the thermoelastic component of LIGO's noise curve in its frequency band, which is now the dominant source of noise, by a comparable factor to take advantage of the opportunity they've afforded us to increase LIGO sensitivity. So I'm going to talk about work done at Caltech by Kip Thorne, Erica D'Ambrosio, and myself, and in Moscow by Vladimir Braginsky, Sergei Streden, and Sergei Vyachanin on our proposal to reduce thermoelastic noise. So in this talk, I will first tell you what thermoelastic noise is so that you can then understand our two proposals to reduce it. They consist first of reshaping the surfaces of the mirror. Now, the mirrors sit at the end of the LIGO arms. Therefore, their mirror surfaces determine the LIGO arm eigenfunctions, and in particular, the intensity cross-sections across the surface of the mirror. And the spirit of our first proposal is basically to reshape the mirror from a standard parabolic shape to another shape, which will produce a much flatter beam cross-section, which, for reasons I'll soon describe, will be advantageous. And if we do this, we'll reduce the spectral density, the square root of the spectral density of the noise, the RMS amplitude, by about a factor of 0.6. Our next proposal consists of simply changing mirror shape from a cylinder to something else, say, for example, this shape here, which, for reasons I'll also describe, reduces the noise, because different shaped mirrors produce different amounts of thermoelastic noise, and will reduce the noise by a factor of about 0.8. Now, all these factors, 0.6 and 0.8, might not seem that dramatic to you. It does lead to the important factor of 2, which might lead to an increase in the event rate of a factor of 8. So this is a great thing. There are some possible complications. I'm changing the mirror's shape and the mirror shape. So many of the people who have code with works with spherical mirrors of a standard shape might be mad at me. Because we'll be introducing greater sensitivity to tilt and other complications. But we believe that other people won't kill me. Everything will work fine, and we'll be able to overcome these problems. So first, well, BitWeb isn't, you know, brandishing a knife yet, so I think I'll be all right. I'll find out after the talk. If I make it back to my car.
Until the end of the talk.
Yeah. So, what is thermoelastic noise? Consider some small subvolume of the mirror. Its temperature is in equilibrium, but it fluctuates about that equilibrium. Therefore, it expands and contracts. Therefore, it displaces material around it, which displaces more material around that. Now, for the frequency ranges of interest, namely the peak of LIGO sensitivity curve, these elastic deformations are much faster than the very slow changes of temperature of the temperature fluctuation. Therefore, we instantaneously develop an elastic halo surrounding this temperature fluctuation. Now, let's consider a lot of these fluctuations, which some are hot, some are cold, scattered throughout the material. Now, if you look on the surface of the mirror, then you see a little sequence of hills and valleys. Now, if a lot of the hills happen to be in the region where the beam is striking, then the mirror looks a little closer than it really is. So we get error in our signal, and this is bad, and we want this to be small. One can convert what I've just described into a formal calculation. Usually, you have to do the computations numerically. There are a few analytic examples of which this is one, of what the spectral density of the noise would look like. So now you understand thermoelastic noise. So let's go back and look at more detail in our two proposals. Our first proposal relies on reshaping the mirrors. This is our unusual shape of mirror, to produce a flatter beam. Now, why do we want a flatter beam? Because it'll do a better job of averaging. Normal LIGO mirrors, in fact, many normal mirrors, are chosen to produce, are spherical, so they're chosen to produce Gaussian beams, which are very highly peaked in the center. Now, you can see the flat beam would do a better job of averaging over these fluctuations because it would, in a sense, be more equitable and therefore would produce less noise. So we want to make flatter beam profiles. Now, unfortunately, we can't make the beam profile perfectly flat because if it was perfectly flat, power would just shoot off the sides and we wouldn't be able to amplify in the LIGO arm, and LIGO wouldn't be able to function. Also, we can't make the beam perfectly flat out to the edge of the mirror and then just cut it off because optics doesn't work that way. There's a diffraction limit because LIGO is a very long cavity, and it's impossible. So we have a gentle smooth fall off, smooth over about 1.5 centimeters, is imposed by the optics. So essentially, we had to proceed by trial and error, creating mirrors and seeing what type of beams they produced. And we found one. Kip found a very clever idea for constructing them. And using this particular mirror shape and this particular beam intensity profile, we can get about a factor of 0.6 improvement, as I noted earlier. Now, our second strategy is to change the shape of the mirror. Now, I say reshape and not resize, because basically there's only one mass that we want to use. We don't want to be too big, and we don't want to be too small. We can't be too big because the experimentalists tell me that if we make the mass too big, then there'll be too much noise introduced from the support system. On the other hand, why would we want to use a smaller mirror? Because from the previous transparency, if we have a bigger mirror, then we can put a bigger beam on it, which will do a better job of averaging out these fluctuations. So why not, if you have a smaller beam, why not just increase the mass to the maximum limit by increasing the beam size and all the dimensions of the mirror in the same proportions? So essentially, we're going to use the maximum mass of about 40 kilograms. Now, what type of shape is ideal? You would think, again, from the previous transparency, that you'd want to have the largest possible, averaging as flattest possible beam that you could. So to support a big flat beam, you'd want to have a very wide mirror. And since the mass is fixed, the mirror would have to be very thin. This is actually not quite correct. It turns out that there's a small, very weak but present competing effect, where if you make a mirror thicker, it will tend to more effectively cancel the fluctuations on the surface underneath the area where you've made it thicker. So the ideal mirrors will compensate for these two effects. On the one hand, the mirror wants to be wide because then you can put a big beam on it and effectively average fluctuations. And on the other hand, it wants to be thick because it can't afford to be too thin. And there are also other sources of noise that arise when you make the mirror too thin. So this, for example, would be the optimal aspect ratio in contrast to the actual aspect ratio used in LIGO, which is a 32 centimeter width for a cylinder. And we can do better still if we imagine just increasing the front face and decreasing the back face, which would allow us to put a very large beam in the front. And yeah, the mirror would be really thin here, but the signal isn't very strong there, the beam intensity profile, so therefore it wouldn't have very much effect on our signal. And if we use this particular mirror shape, which for lack of a better name I'm going to call a cone, we can get a factor of about 0.6 improvement. That should be 0.8. One of those is 0.8, and it's this one. Yes, there we go. And if you combine the two strategies of reshaping the mirror on the surface and reshaping the bulk distribution of mass in the mirror, you get a factor, because they're roughly independent, they roughly multiply, so you get a factor of about a half. In fact, you have to do detailed numerical calculations, but it turns out this is approximately right. Now, there are a few problems, because we've just changed the shape of the mirror, and this is an awful, awful thing. Well, first and foremost, we can't use reshaped mirrors everywhere. LIGO is an interferometer, and yeah, light is bouncing off these mirrors, so it doesn't really matter for the external test mass mirrors, the end mirrors, what the shape of the far side is. But for the internal test mass mirrors, light goes through it, at least on current LIGO designs. We haven't gotten to the aluminum non-transmissive mirrors yet. So we have to have both sides of the mirror flat, so this really strongly constrains what we can do in terms of reshaping. And for these mirrors, we have very little freedom to reshape. Also, for flat, for our beam reshaping, when we reshape the way we cut the mirror, we made the mirror much flatter. So as you can see, flat mirrors are more sensitive to tilt. That is, if we tilt the mirror, the beam spot will shift much more for a flat mirror than for a comparable spherical mirror. Now, because the beam spot is moved, you know, this whole beam is moved up, so more power is going off this side now. So we have increased diffraction losses. And also, let's suppose we just tilt this mirror here, but we keep this mirror flat. Well, this beam spot moves, but this beam spot... So we will, these two beams will mismatch at the interferometer, and we'll have power going into the dark port, which is bad also. So we need... So, we will demand from LIGO engineers greater control of the sensitivity to tilt. Tilt will dynamically fluctuate, and we demand slightly greater tolerances, but only slightly greater. And neither of these two technical problems are, we believe, going to be that difficult to resolve. So in sum, we believe that our two proposals of reshaping the cross sections of the beam and reshaping the actual distribution of mass in the mirrors themselves can provide us with about a factor of 2 reduction in the amplitude of the thermoelastic noise in LIGO, and that we'll be able to take advantage of the opportunities that Alessandro Nienba's proposal has given us. Thank you.
Any questions?
Yeah. How do you sense tilt?
How do you sense? There's a servo system which senses tilt by, I actually don't know the experimental details. People just tell me that they sense tilt. You could, in principle, do it by reflecting a very small laser off the edge of a corner of the mirror or on the side of the mirror. I don't know in experimentally actually how they do it. Mm-hmm. Well, you can just change the let's suppose you change all the mirrors to this new shape, right? So you have some different type of mode family. So I assume that when you tilt it, you would excite the next highest mode. It would be an asymmetric mode. So you have a 0-0 mode, and you have an analogous 0-1 mode. So in principle, you just carry over the same procedure, but you'd modify it to use a different collection of modes.
Brzezinski tells us in private conversations that if we have to go to 10 to the minus 10 radians controls, you can do it.
You better be able to do it.
With auxiliary laser monitoring, that's readily within the high precision measurement community's capabilities. But at 10 to the minus 8 radians, which we, from these preliminary calculations, we think we may be able to live at 10 to the minus 8 radians. Something similar to what we currently utilizing on. But we don't know for sure the 10 to the minus 8 radians.
Yes.
Preliminary. It's maybe worth saying that this 10 to the minus 8 radians comes out of an adaptation of the end-to-end model that Erica D'Ambrosio has been working
yes.
with. The same end-to-end model. So.
I guess there's no temperature control.
No, these are suspended, so it's not like they're in a big bath of liquid nitrogen, so there's
right.
not much we can do.
Is there a problem with summer versus winter measurements or something like that?
The temperature change, 300 Kelvin is the temperature which determines the scale of the temperature fluctuation, so if you change it by, 5 or 6 degrees, it's not going to have that dramatic of a difference.
So in fact, Patricia in her talk will describe the fact that these kinds of designs require a megawatt of circulating power in the arms. That's LIGO 2 is a megawatt. That's a hell of a lot of power. Absorbed in there and produces internal energy. That's the big temperature problem.
Because it makes sense that the optical curve would be something curved, and you said that can't be because the light just did not move, so couldn't you have sort of resolution of adding one another mirror to the space of the
But it's traveling over a really short length, so.
Brzezinski has suggested sticking a lens in the interferometer arm. I think many people find that frightening. you could adjust the shape by an appropriate optical element inside the interferometer arm. One wouldn't want to do that if one can avoid it. And I think there's a much simpler solution.
Okay, anything else? Okay, so thank Richard again, and